Thanks, Tal. So I'm Pericles. I'm going to talk to you about our work in making bounce checking faster. I'm sure all of you know that C programs are prone to dangerous bound errors that are routinely exploited by attackers. And I hope you agree with me that we cannot fix this in the near future by porting all our code to C# or Java. That's because there's so much C code around and more is being written every day, so it would be a tremendous porting effort. That's why there's been lots of research in trying to address this problem. But previous solutions are not sufficient. The best option is to use bug-finding tools during development, but these tools cannot remove all bugs from the code we ship. Another option is to use safe languages, but rather than a completely new language, just use a new dialect so that we can have to do less porting. But these solutions have not been adopted by people, either because the porting is still too much or because they are worried about the lock-in. Furthermore, some solutions that have been designed to be shipped with the production code break binary compatibility. So there are all or nothing solutions. We cannot deploy them incrementally. So people have addressed this by developing backwards compatible solutions that don't break binary compatibility, but these solutions tend to be slow. And performance is also critical for adoption. That's why we have developed a new defense we call buggy bounds checking. Instead of the exact object bounds, we enforce the allocation bounds, which include the object and some padding, and we make the padding big enough to make the allocation size a power of 2. Now here we waste some space to do this, but by doing this, we can represent the bounds, the allocation size, using its binary logarithm, which is very tiny. And we'll see how we can use this compact representation to make bounds checking much faster. Our solution is backwards compatible, so you don't need to port your source code to some dialect of C. And it doesn't break binary compatibility, so you can mix instrumented code with uninstrumented code. It has a broad coverage of attacks, essentially the same as traditional bounds checking with exact bounds, but it is much faster. We have an average CPU overhead of around 30%. Specifically for the spec benchmarks, we have a 6-fold improvement over traditional backwards compatible runtime bounds checking. And despite wasting some memory to increase performance, we only have a memory overhead of 7.5% in average. We also wanted to see whether we can use this in practice, so we also measured the version of Apache using our system, and we had just 8% throughput degradation with a fully saturated CPU. Let's have a look how this system works. This is the big picture. The system is part of a compiler, so it works on source code, C source code, that is analyzed, and it inserts checks around pointer arithmetic that it cannot prove correct at compile time. We also link with our runtime support library, which includes things like bounds checking versions of standard library functions, as well as our implementation of malloc. And importantly, we can link with third-party libraries that have not been compiled with our system. Of course, only the code that we have compiled will perform any checks, but the two will work together, and this is quite important if you want to deploy this incrementally or use it selectively. The result of this process is an executable that is hardened against bound errors. Let's have a look at an example of a pointer arithmetic that goes wrong. First of all, pointers that are directly initialized with the address of an allocation, like P here, are valid by definition. That means they point inside the bounds of the object. But pointers that are the result of pointer arithmetic may become invalid due to a bug in the program. For example, pointer Q here now points 100 bytes beyond the end of the object. Attackers can exploit such bugs. For example, they can use an out-of-bounds pointer to overwrite some security critical data in the program. We can defend against such attacks by introducing runtime checks. And one way to do it without breaking backwards compatibility by using, say, fat pointers, is to use a table to store the bounds of objects. And for example, here, where we allocate the object, we would store its bounds in a table in a way that we can retrieve them using any valid pointer to the object, to anywhere inside the object. This way, we can use the source pointer P to retrieve the bounds of the object it points to, and use them to check the result pointer Q. We know that the source pointer P is valid because it's either the result of an allocation, like here, or it's the result of some other check pointer arithmetic. So we maintain this invariant throughout the execution of the program, that every pointer is valid, therefore they can be dereferenced safely. The problem with this approach is that storing and retrieving bounds from this data structure can be expensive. It is typically implemented using a splay tree that maps memory range to its bounds, and traversing a splay tree may require several memory accesses, and all this is just for one pointer arithmetic operation. But with baggy bounds, we can do better. With baggy bounds, our example allocation of 200 bytes will be rounded to 256 bytes. By also aligning the object to a multiple of its allocation size, we get this very nice property. All valid pointers to our allocation share a prefix, and the length of the suffix that can be different is the binary logarithm of the allocation size. With this property, all we need to retrieve the bounds of a valid pointer is this binary logarithm of the allocation size. And this can fit in 8 bits. If you think about this, this is 8 times less than what we would need for exact object bounds. That is 4 bytes for the base address of the object, and another 4 for the object's length. So we can use this compact bounds representation to replace the splay tree with a lookup table. And we can make this table small by further constraining allocation sizes to be multiples of 16 bytes. Then we just need one entry, one byte in the table for every 16 bytes of memory. And with this table, we can now use efficient table lookups to retrieve the bounds. We just need to copy the source pointer, right shift by 4 to get an index into the table, and perform a single memory read. And now you probably expect that we need to explicitly recover the lower and upper bound and perform 2 comparisons to make sure that the result is within bounds. But with baggy bounds, we can actually use the source pointer and the value we just read from the table directly. All we need to do is make sure that the source pointer, P, and the result pointer, Q, share a prefix of the right size. And we can do this efficiently by copying the source pointer and XORing it with the result pointer. This would make the bits in the prefix 0 if the result pointer is within bounds. Then we just need to discard the suffix by right-shifting with the value we just read from the table and compare the result with 0. Conveniently, the right-shift instruction here sets the condition flag, so we don't even need to perform a comparison instruction. And here the result, of course, is not 0 because our pointer is out of bounds. So this more or less describes the basic idea. So now I'll move on to describe a couple of interesting details. First of all, so far we have only described how to retrieve the bounds of a pointer using a valid pointer. But that's not the whole story. C programs can actually use out-of-bounds pointers. That's OK. As long as they don't dereference them, they can use them in pointer arithmetic that may result again in a valid pointer. In fact, the C standard only allows out-of-bounds pointers pointing 1 byte beyond an object. But some programs go beyond that, or they even go below an allocation. For example, some people simulate base 1 arrays, which are not supported by C, by subtracting 1 from the result of malloc. Even though this is technically not valid C, we want to support such programs, and we also want to support the legal cases of out-of-bounds pointers. The solution is twofold. First, we need to mark such pointers to avoid them being dereferenced later, instead of raising an error the moment they go out of bounds. Here we follow previous work by setting the top bit and at the same time making sure that the top half of the address space is protected, so they cannot be dereferenced. This is frequently already the case because the operating system is there. Now, second, we need a way to to recover a valid address that we can use in a table lookup if we encounter a source pointer that is marked. Previous work here has used an extra data structure that is used to map such out-of-bounds pointers to their objects. In this implementation, we decided to support only the common cases of out-of-bounds pointers and avoid using a data structure entirely. We'll see later how we can support even more cases in 64 bits. For now, we can support out-of-bounds pointers 8 bytes below, above or 8 bytes below an object, an allocation, by relying on every allocation size being a multiple of 16 bytes. If we encounter an out-of-bounds pointer that points to the bottom half of a 16-byte slot, then we know that it must be an overflow, so we just subtract 16 bytes to get a valid address. If we encounter a pointer that points to the top half of a 16-byte slot, then we know that it must be an underflow, so we just add 16 bytes to get a valid address. Note that this technique is useful even if we do use a data structure to support all cases, because it makes sure that for most programs, that data structure is not used at all and therefore has no overhead. Unfortunately, by adding support for out-of-bounds pointers, we have now introduced one more check in our fast path, shown here in red. We need to do an extra check to see if the top bit of a pointer is set before using it to look up the bounds in the table. But most pointers are valid and do this check without need. The solution is to make sure that out-of-bounds pointers raise a normal bound error. This way, we only need to check whether the top bit is set if we find a bound error. And in that case, we would recover the valid address and redo the table lookup and redo the check. So the way we achieve this is by setting the top half of our table to zero. Out-of-bounds pointers have their top bit set, so they map to this top half of the table. And the value of zero in the table corresponds to an allocation size of one. And this would raise a bound error for any pointer arithmetic that actually changes the pointer. So this way, for the common case of valid pointers, we just need to do one table lookup and one efficient bounds check. But as we discussed, to support these efficient checks, we need to pad and align every object. And we also need to make sure that it has an entry in the table. Let's have a look how we do this for different kinds of variables. For heap allocated objects, we use a binary body system. This is a natural fit because the body system rounds allocations to powers of two and aligns them accordingly. This is a good fit both ways because the body system also needs a way to know the size of objects for which it can use our table. Now, for local variables, we need to align their stack frame when we enter the function. But we only need to do this if the stack frame contains an unsafe variable, that is either an array that is accessed in a dangerous way or an address taken scalar. And we also need to instrument function entry to make sure that we set the table entries for these unsafe variables. Global variables can be easily padded and aligned at compile time, and we can set their table entries on program startup. But there is one last issue here with variables that have been allocated in uninstrumented code, such as third-party libraries we link with. This uninstrumented code will not set the table entries, and it won't align and pad variables. But we want checks on such objects to succeed for interoperability. The solution here is to make the default table value 31, which corresponds to maximal bounds. So we make these checks succeed unconditionally. Let's have a look now at some experimental results to see what we have gained in performance. We measured the CPU and memory overhead using the Olden and the SPEC benchmarks. The Olden benchmarks tend to have lots of very small allocations, while the SPEC benchmarks tend to have more array accesses and therefore more checks. We measured the two systems. The first one, Buggy, is our system as described, implemented on Microsoft Windows. And the second system, Splay, is a version of our system using a splater implementation from previous solutions instead of a lookup table, and using the standard allocator instead of a body system. We use the exact same analysis to determine which checks to insert, so these systems are otherwise identical. So we first measure the execution time. And here we can see that our system in blue is consistently faster than using a splatery, especially for the spec benchmarks on the right, which contain more checks. Our average overhead is 30%, while the splatery's overhead is 6 times slowed down on average. So we can see that trading memory the way we did actually paid out pretty well. So the question now is how much we lose in memory. So next we measured the memory usage of the two systems. And here the results are actually quite surprising to me, because even though for the most of the spec benchmarks on the right, the splatery wins by a small margin, for most of the older benchmarks on the left, the splatery loses by a large margin. And that's because these benchmarks have lots of very small allocations, which force the splatery to allocate an individual entry for each one of them, which can be expensive if the splatery entry is comparable in size with the memory allocation. We also observe on these benchmarks with lots of small allocations that using the body allocator actually uses less memory than the standard Windows allocator. That's because the default allocator uses inline metadata, and this can be expensive for very small allocations for objects around 16 bytes. In average, our overhead is just 7.5%, which is what is surprising, versus 100% in average for the splatery. But we also wanted to see whether our system is usable with real applications and real systems workloads. So we measured an instrumented version of the Apache web server. Here we increased the number of concurrent clients bombarding the server with nonstop requests without dropping the connection until we saturate the CPU, which happened at around 5 or 6 concurrent clients. At that point, we measured a throughput degradation of 8%, which I think shows that the system is quite usable in practice. In the paper, we have more detailed performance results, and we also evaluate a couple more applications. And I want to move on to a final experimental result. We evaluated the effectiveness of our system in detecting attacks using a collection of buffer overflows. I mostly mention this because I want to discuss a limitation. Even though we detected 17 out of 18 attacks, our system fails to detect one attack that involves an overflow from one structure field that overrides a field in the same structure. That's because we don't pad and align individual structure fields, but rather we pad and align the entire allocation, because doing this would break binary compatibility by changing the memory layout. I also want to note that the C language is rather ambiguous here, because although it is legal to traverse from one structure field to another, even though it's rare in practice, at the same time it can be an indication of a vulnerability. So enforcing this raises a potential of false positives. So one final idea we investigated in the paper is how to make use of the new 64-bit architectures to make bounce checking faster. The idea here is that since a buggy bounce the representation for buggy bounce is so small, we can actually fit them inside 64-bit pointers. And therefore, we can avoid the memory lookup entirely. All we need to do is copy the source pointer and right-shift the 64-bit register to get the bits holding the size to the 8-bit version of the 64-bit register. Now, these pointers, unlike FAT pointers, don't change the memory layout because we don't change the size of the pointer. And accesses to such pointers remain atomic. Another good use for the spare bits is with out-of-bounds pointers. We can store an offset inside 64-bit out-of-bounds pointers that can be used to recover a valid address from the out-of-bounds pointer. This greatly increases the range of out-of-bounds pointers we can support without having to use a costly data structure. So, as in the 32-bit version, we want to avoid the explicit check for out-of-bounds pointers in our fast path. So similarly, we set the size bits to zero so that we raise a normal bound error. But here we don't have a table to back the size, so we need to dedicate a few more spare bits to save the size. So with this discussion on 64 bits, I want to conclude my talk. To summarize, we've described an improved bounds checking system that is designed for production runs. It doesn't break backwards compatibility, so you don't have to modify your source code. And it doesn't break binary compatibility, so you can link with libraries. And it has better performance than traditional bounds checking. It has low CPU overhead of just 30% on average. And despite trading space for performance, it also has low memory overhead of 7.5% in average by avoiding the use of potentially expensive data structures. So we think that our system is suitable to protect production runs. So thank you for your attention. I'm now ready to take questions.
Ben Zorn, Microsoft Research. So there was a paper in PLDI called SoftBath. Can you
compare it? The SoftBound paper tracks individual pointers, so it basically uses a table, which makes it rather efficient, like our solution, and uses it to track individual pointers, so it can also solve the problem of sub-objects, but subject to the ambiguities of C. So the problem there is that because they don't have this trick of having a compact bounds representation, they need to store the entire 8 bytes for every pointer. So that gives quite a high memory overhead for benchmarks that have lots of data structures with pointers in them. So for the olden benchmarks, I think they have more than a 200-300% overhead just for those.
And the other question was, can you compare against other allocators in terms of space and then the width of the allocator?
No, I haven't compared with other allocators. I know that some allocators don't use the inline metadata. So in that case, we wouldn't have this artifact of the binary body system having lower memory consumption than the base allocator. It probably have more, more like the spec benchmarks, which don't have so many small allocations. But even though the memory overhead might go up, I still think that it's surprisingly low. Thank you.
I have a question for you. So this isn't actually kind of specific to this work in particular, but you know, when you say 30% overhead, that's if we sort of apply this uniformly across our code. If we have a notion of unsafe context like we do in, you know, something like C#, and we could say, well, here's, you know, some hotspots where we actually just want to turn these checks off, like how much of the overhead that you're getting is concentrated around a few hotspots versus, you know, occasional checks throughout the code?
Well, one of the good things of being binary compatible is that you can actually deploy this just for parts of code that you want to. For example, if you have vetted some library that you trusted more, you can completely disable it for that library.
Right.
So you still have to pay, in most cases, when you do it in more fine-grained way, the cost of padding every allocation, so you have the memory overhead. But you can disable checks for code paths that you can confirm that are safe or that you just don't want to have the cost, the performance overhead.
And is your intuition from profiling this that most of the overhead is concentrated just to run a few hotspots, or?
Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. For some benchmarks, it is. But for example, like the most expensive benchmark we have is one that uses actually this malloc minus one. Mm-hmm. And then we hit the slow path all the time. And that's actually just one point. So for example, another way to solve this was just to pad the allocation from below. And then the overhead went down. But you could also just disable the check there. But sometimes, there are a couple of hotspots, but the overhead is also uniformly distributed because you check the pointer arithmetic and not the individual memory accesses. So you need to disable a whole series of pointer arithmetics in some case, which contribute to a certain point. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's an implementation sort of specific.
That's certainly a good idea, because most of the, you can, for example, just audit the code that has high performance overhead,
right. Exactly.
And then just blanket check everything else, and then you solve your problem.
Yeah, I mean, in industry, I tend to say, you know, we're going to have somebody audit, you know, this or that area where we added an annotation to turn these checks off. And yeah, my sense is that you know, 30% sounds like more like an upper bound as opposed to what you might encounter in practice.
Well, we don't want to start disabling checks because we can always make it go down to practically zero. So,
great.
Any other questions? Well, then I guess thank you.
Great, thank you very much.